Welcome to the Transforming Aging Summit 2015, where conscious aging experts are gathering to shift the paradigm of aging to one of vast potential infused with vitality, passion, purpose, continual growth, and service, all to help you make your later years your best years. We appreciate you sharing this information with your friends and family. And now, founder and director of the Center for Conscious Eldering, and organizer of the Conscious Aging Alliance, and author of Conscious Living, Conscious Aging, your host, Ron Pevney.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to day two of the Transforming Aging Summit, featuring leaders who are working to support an empowering, life-affirming vision for aging in today's world. I'm Ron Pevney, and I have the privilege to be your host for this event. We're delighted that you're joining us for this summit and for this session with our special guest, Meg Newhouse. Meg is going to be sharing her wisdom on legacies of the heart, a hallmark of conscious aging. I'd like to read you a little bit of Meg's bio for those of you who aren't that familiar with her. Margaret L., known to most people as Meg Newhouse, Ph.D., of Passion and Purpose Life Crafting, is an independent educator, a certified life coach, a consultant, a presenter, and an author specializing in vision and values-based life crafting and legacy for the post-midlife, what she calls bonus years. She's the author of a forthcoming book, Reframing Legacy, Living a Life That Matters and Endures. And Meg's work on legacy has intensified her professional and personal engagement in conscious elderhood with its potential for transforming our society. Many people know Meg as the founder of the Life Planning Network, which is a community of professionals practicing and promoting holistic planning for the second half of life. And Meg also helped plan a really fantastic book called Live Smart After 50. She co-edited that book in 1913, and she's helped plan five of the positive aging conferences. So, Meg, we are honored and delighted to have you joining us today, sharing your wealth of wisdom about a theme that's central to the vision of conscious aging that the summit is about. And I know nobody who better understands and communicates the importance of legacy than you. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Ron. I am completely honored and delighted to be here.
And before we get into our discussion, I'd like to remind our listeners that there is those who are listening via the web, that there is a question box on your screen. And if you have a question that you'd like to ask Meg, I encourage you to type it in there. We might, no promises, but we might have time for Meg to address a couple of those questions a little bit later in our discussion. But Meg, to get us going, in a critical aspect of conscious aging is paying conscious attention to legacy. Legacy is a big, important theme, you know, the legacy of our lives up to this point, and the legacy we have yet to create during the next chapters of our one precious life. So would you please tell us, what is legacy? What does that mean to you? And can you give us some examples of what that means, different types of legacy?
Sure. For me, legacy is far more than the dictionary definition, which is material bequest at your death, usually in your will. The shorthand that I use is it's the imprint of your life that lives on past your death and into the next generations. And it's from who you are and your actions and those that live on then in memories or in the values that they exhibit, or intangible things, that records and objects that you leave behind that speak to who you are. It's very, in my view, very multidimensional and multifaceted. So if I could, I'd like to give an example that will illustrate some of the facets anyway, and then I'll go a little more.
Yeah, please do, Meg.
Okay, this is about a somebody who was in one of my workshops, and I'll call her, at her request, Roberta. I often bring into my workshops examples, my own examples, and in this case of legacies from my grandfather, who was a very, my paternal grandfather, who was a very important person in my life, left me a lot of legacies in his values, his integrity, his love of nature and writing and poetry. And among those was an autobiography and his book of hand-typed about 100 poems that he pretty much knew by heart.
Wow.
So Roberta spoke up, and she was so sad. She said, "My legacy is no legacy. I have almost nothing like that. My parents were eager to get away from their homes, their parents, their roots. They kept moving. They kept throwing, changing their furniture. And the only tangible legacy I have is a hand-sewn set of Christmas, felt Christmas ornaments that one of my grandmothers made. And I'm so bereft." But as we talked, what she realized, of course, was that she had gotten legacies. They were just negative ones, painful ones, of rootlessness, of not honoring family and community. And she had actually inadvertently, unconsciously, passed that on, she thinks, to her son, and in her early life, that's how it was. But after midlife, she began thinking about all of this and realizing she did not want to stay with legacy, this intangible values legacy, and has taken many steps to turn it around. She's created communities for herself in her condo and her professional group and actually in her church. So I love this story because it gets at some of the dimensions of legacies, the tangible versus the intangible. And actually, most people in my workshops, when I ask them to think of a question of a legacy they've received from somebody who cares about them, they come up with an intangible legacy first, a values or a character legacy that has obviously been expressed in actions, but that's what is carried, that they've carried forth. And also the difference between the tangible and the intangible legacies and the positive and the negative and the mixed legacies that we get. Also the unintentional way we are about our legacies versus intentional. And another one that I like to emphasize a little bit too is the being versus the doing, because I do think that just who you are is part of your legacy. The other thing, and you know, feel free to stop me, but, you know, what comes out of this story is also a really key point for me, and that is we are leaving legacies all the time. And so it's good to be conscious and aware of them.
And, you know, I think that for so many people in the modern world that really sees our so-called productive years and the years when we're making a difference, that sees those years pretty much ending with retirement age, I think a lot of people, Meg, have internalized the idea that, well, whatever legacy it is that my life is about, that I've created, has pretty much been created up to now. And so now I'm just kind of resting on my laurels or in some kind of a holding pattern, you know, for the rest of my life. And to my mind, that's such a disempowering way of viewing our lives and viewing legacy. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. obviously, I don't believe that, and part of what I'm trying to do in my work and my writing is to help people realize that their legacy is ongoing through their lives, and that in our second half is a time when actually this gets into the whole interrelationship with conscious aging, that this is a time when we naturally, just kind of as part of psychological and spiritual development, we are much more interested in what our lives have meant. We care so much. We begin to care even more about what we are leaving behind and whether we are leaving the world better. And so it's a very, and what meaning we want to make of our lives and how to add to it. So this is a really wonderful time to both look back at your legacies and see what you've gotten and what you might want to change, but also look forward to the other legacies that you still want to leave. And right on your program, actually, are a lot of people, I'll mention two or three that whom I know personally, who are all about leaving, taking advantage of the second half of life and these chapters where we have more time, we have all this wisdom, or hopefully anyway, and we can make a big difference or a small difference. And that's I really want to align with Rick Moody yesterday, who said it doesn't really matter the size; it's the consciousness with which we are giving of ourselves. And so tomorrow you're talking to Mark Friedman, who has Encore.org and has introduced the Purpose Prize for people over 62, I think, who have created programs to address social ills. You have Jan Hively and Moira Allen, who are going to be, they're talking about the Global Pass It On Network, and help me remember the third one I was thinking
of.
Well,
John Sorensen, who founded the Conscious Elders Network, which is really committed to helping elders have part of their legacy be conscious activism, taking stands to help create a better future for our children. So we'll be speaking with him tomorrow.
That was he, and I don't know, you know, it was one of those, quote, senior moments. Yeah, and I think, it's where to go. So as long as we're on this subject, I'll say a little bit more about how this ties in with the whole notion of conscious aging. The whole process of looking at and considering our legacies is really, it's very similar to the inner work that Reb Zalman Schachter Shalomi, whom we talked about earlier as well, and your book, of course, In Conscious Aging. It's that inner work involving life review, healing past regrets, making amends for things, forgiving yourself and others, trying to confronting your mortality and thinking about your legacy and how you can mentor the next generation. So this happens when you do the legacy work. All of this happens. You do this, and I'd love to tell another story if I could about that illustrates that.
Yeah, one more, please.
Oh, I have so many.
Yeah, one more would be great, Meg.
Okay. Oh, golly. So this is about, this is actually in a book by Ira Byock, a palliative physician, and called The Four Things That Matter Most. And in it, he talks about Jennifer, a young mother, and her mother, who is, and her mother Mary, who is 58 and dying of metastasized brain cancer, and she has a little toddler. She's been a very dutiful caretaker, or but it's been very difficult because her mother has been really hard, and she, and Jennifer has suffered a lot of physical, emotional abuse from that relationship, and she is, it's been suggested to her that she try to heal it before it's too late. So one day she's visiting with her little son, and her mother is struggling to do something that she earlier could have done beautifully. And suddenly, Jennifer felt compassion. And she spoke to her mother out of her heart and took the risk to ask her if she really wanted her there. And that started a conversation, very halting, very stiff at first, awkward at first, a conversation where her mother apologized, said, I know it's been hard. We have to change things. They got into the kind of life she had with her mother, which was even worse. And the upshot of it was that by the end, well, she said something very important. She said to Jennifer, I know you're the way you are because I was the way I am, and I'm the way I was because my mother was the way she was. And it is too late to keep this going. We have got to do something about it. It has to stop with him. And she pointed to her grandson.
Mm.
And the upshot was that she hugged her daughter for the first time, told her how proud she was, how she was the artist of her life. Those were her words. And Jennifer found it was just a total aha for her. She was able to forgive. She was completely motivated to work on her own life so she would not pass her anger and hatred on to her son. In her interview with Dr. Byock, she said, my mom's been gone for 3.5 years, and hardly a day has gone by that I have not remembered this conversation. So there's a legacy, a lineage.
Wow.
And
yeah, what a beautiful gift. Beautiful gift and a beautiful example of how we can transform legacies, how we can the chain of negative legacies that we may be part of. That's beautiful.
Exactly. And that we do have the choice. That's one of the things I really want to emphasize. We do have a choice if we are aware of the legacies, both that we have received and that we're leaving. That we have a choice to make them better. And this might be, by the way, where I talk about what I mean by legacies of the heart. And for this, by the way, I would like to give I'd like to give credit to my friend and colleague Donna Crone. We several years ago got interested together and worked together on legacy and gave workshops. And she was very much, I think, maybe the original author of this idea of legacies of the heart. So it's, to me, the best way that we can live so that our legacies are likely to be positive, growth-promoting, is what I call living from the heart. And that means from your highest, your wisest, your most generous, your most authentic self. And it means, as best as you can, leaving behind the fear-based ego instincts like that lead to control and domination and competitiveness and greed. I'm very well aware, personally, and that as human beings, we have all of these. And this is sort of like a compass to guide us, a touchstone. But I think it's really important because if we're living that way, the legacies will be kind of from love. And they are likely to be received that way, although we have to know that we have no control over how our legacies are received.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Meg, I think you're already speaking to this, but there's something I want to ask you to be a little bit explicit about a question I have. You know, there are a lot of people who, for whatever reasons, have anxiety about the legacy that they've created in their lives up to this point. You know, maybe indeed they have things to regret. Maybe indeed some of the way they have lived has left a hurtful mark on others. And I'm wondering, how can we transform anxiety about legacies, anxiety we may carry about our legacy up to now, how can we transform that into intentionality about the legacies that we have yet to create? How can we let go of the concern and the fear about the past and really begin to focus on the legacy that we have yet to create, which can in many ways transform the legacy of the past, of our past?
Exactly. And believe me, I personally know about this. So I think that's one of the values of looking back at your life and looking at the legacies. And then it's a lot about forgiveness. Forgiveness of those who harmed you and forgiveness of yourself for having left, you know, maybe been unconscious about leaving those legacies. I'll just give you an example. My mother was really critical, and I passed that on to my kids. So I've had to, that's just one thing I have. And so I've tried, I've become aware. I think I'm much better with my grandkids. I've asked for their forgiveness. I just am trying to be aware of that, and that particular legacy in my life right now is still a little bit there. So I would just say it's the inner work and the forgiveness and the making amends and just being kind to yourself and then moving forward.
And that forgiveness can very well be what allows us to move forward, because it frees up energy from being bound to the past, and it frees it up so that we can move forward with intention and intention to bring forth our best.
I really agree with that, and I think actually from my own experience, I think forgiveness both of others and for self is one. I think that might be the hardest spiritual task that we have. It's been hard, but I think it's very liberating.
Yeah, I think it's our friend Rosemary Cox, from whom I heard these words. She said that forgiveness is the hardest chord to play in the human symphony, and I think that speaks to what you just said so pointedly.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Hey, Meg, I'd like to ask you a bit about tangible legacies. And, you know, you made the distinction between tangible legacies, you know, something that you, that is got a tangible form that we can give to others you know, in many cases to our descendants. And those intangible legacies we leave just in terms of how we and our energy and our lives impact them. Let's talk a little bit about tangible legacies. What are some of the tangible legacies that you find can be really meaningful gifts to our descendants, as well as being meaningful for us in the whole process of creating them?
Oh, thank you for asking. Well, I'm going to give a few kinds of things, and then maybe we can focus a little bit on the ethical wills or legacy letters. But I wanted to say that I see this as bequeathing our internal wealth and who we are through objects that mean a lot to us. And so that could be artistic creations. If you're in, everybody's creative. So in some way, something like a quilt or a painting, a collage, poetry that you've written, or woodworking, just so many things like that. A second class is heirlooms and prized possessions. It could also include recipes, but things that have meant a lot to you. And I want to say that with any of these tangible legacies, they will mean so much more if you accompany them with explanations and stories. It's the stories, I think, that help, you know, they'll help the people who never knew you or whose memories are not so good understand more about you, because they'll understand why they were important and what they meant to you. A third group of things is memoirs and videos and photo books and family histories and genealogy. And then the ethical wills or legacy letters. You know, it's really important for people, just like Roberta showed, to have these tangible reminders of their roots and also these stories about their family. And I'm reminded of what Rick Moody said yesterday, Reb Zalman's famous, "Are you saved? Have you downloaded your legacy? Have you done your legacy work? Have you downloaded your wisdom?" So, this is really important. And this is something, by the way, that I think we should be doing now, wherever we are. We don't wait till you think you're about to die to do these things. And I'm speaking to myself, too. I have a lot of unfinished legacy projects.
Yeah, when you're about to die, you may not have the energy or the health to do it.
Right.
Or it may be that you die before you have a chance to do it. So
exactly.
Do it now when you have a chance. Meg, before I ask you a question about legacy letters, I'd like to remind our listeners that who are listening via the web, that if you have a question for Meg, this would be a really good time to type it into the question box, and we may indeed have a chance to address it. So, Meg, you talked about an ethical will, and you talked about a legacy letter. For some people, those terms aren't familiar. So can you say a little bit about ethical wills and legacy letters and what goes into those?
Sure. Ethical wills come from a pretty old tradition in Judaism, but it was also a tradition in medieval Christianity. It's the idea of capturing your internal wealth, your values, your principles, the lessons you've learned, your significant life experiences, and your choices, stories, and then you can add expressions of gratitude and forgiveness or hopes and blessings. Some of them include the practical instructions around how you want to be at the end of life. So it's whatever you want. Ethical wills are more formal and a little more, I would say, daunting. Legacy letters are just, you can take any piece of that and you can write letters to different people or a group of people, and they can cover those kinds of topics, and they can be well, both of these projects can be ongoing. I, for example, have written legacy letters to my kids and siblings and husband and in-laws, daughters-in-law, but I need to update them because I keep, I hope anyway, evolving. I need to update them, but at least they've got something. And I think it's very challenging to do it because it's you're going deep. You're bearing your soul, kind of, or at least I am, and you don't know how it's going to be received. But I have to just trust that they're going to be that they are already, and that they are going to be really grateful for those later on. And I write my grandchildren letters each year for their birthdays, just little short ones, but kind of highlighting the things I'm noticing and admiring about them. So those are a couple of examples. And by the way, in your book, Ron, you have some beautiful examples too.
Well, thank you, Meg. You know, it seems to me, certainly from my understanding of and my work with legacy letters, and also with ethical wills, that one of the real gifts in that isn't just the gift that we're bequeathing to others, to our descendants, but it's the opportunity for us to look at our lives in a whole different way. To look deeply, to look for those threads that tied the events of our lives together, to look for the deeper meanings. And so what a gift to give ourselves as well as to give our descendants.
Yes, it certainly is. It's all part of that inner work, and that's why legacy work is so intertwined with the conscious aging work. Absolutely. It was a very rich experience. It is a very rich experience.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. You go
Let
ahead.
Let me give you, I do have this quote from, I think it's the shortest legacy letter I've come across. It's quick. Sam Levinson, he was writing it, quote, to children and grandchildren everywhere, and here's what he says: leaving you everything I have had in my lifetime, colon, a good family, respect for learning, compassion for my fellow man, and some four-letter words for all occasions like help, give, care, feel, and love. So,
wow, beautiful and powerful.
And it doesn't have to be a big deal, right?
I love that. I love that. Hey, I'd like to ask you about one other thing that, to my mind, can be really an important way of, an intangible way of giving some of our internal wealth to others in our legacy. And that's by doing oral history work, you know, perhaps video-based, perhaps just audio-based, you know, doing oral history work with others and having them do oral history work with us. Can you talk a little about this? Do you see this as part of as one possibility for the legacy process?
Absolutely, and we even did it once on a family vacation, and we just did it ourselves and with the kids even, and they were, you know, pretty young. But that's something we already have. I have heard so many stories about people who. Well, not so many, but several stories about people who didn't seize that opportunity and later lived to regret it, and those who have done it and are really happy. There's wonderful work being done intergenerationally For example, I believe at Peter Whitehead's and Catherine Whitehead's intergenerational school in Cleveland, and the kids come in and interview the elders, and it's just such a win-win for both. So, and I know you've had that experience. So,
no, in fact, that kind of work, Meg, is what led me into conscious aging. A bunch of experiences I had doing oral history work, video-based, with elders in our community, and positioning it for them. This is an important way that you can leave your legacy for grandchildren, for others who might never, actually have a chance to know you in person. So I think it's really important. And for people who really would like a little guidance in how you might do oral history work with others or have people do it with you, just Google oral history resources, and you'll find a wealth of material. Meg, we have a question from one of our listeners, Linda. She says, I've been working with ethical wills and legacies since 1995, individually, in workshops, and through a nonprofit I founded. It's always uphill to get people to face this work because it brings up mortality. I'd be interested in your thoughts as to how to motivate people and get them over this hump of the fear of mortality.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I don't think I have any magic bullets. I just try to talk about mortality casually, and also just think of them as kind of in the middle of their lives and thinking about their legacies for this chapter. If they're really in denial, I personally believe that it's important to get people to accept their mortality. And if they do, it makes everything more precious and is a motivator. But honestly, Linda, I don't, maybe you do, Ron, but I don't have a magic bullet for that.
No, I don't have a magic bullet either. I think all that I would say is that, and I think you just spoke beautifully to it, Meg, that if you view legacy not as something you've got to get in touch with because you're going to die tomorrow, but as something that you still have plenty of opportunity to work on and to create and to make beautiful, then mortality doesn't become that big an issue. You're really looking toward the possibilities of the future, but keeping mortality in mind, you know, reminding us how precious every day is. Meg, another question for you. This is from myself. When I've done legacy work with groups in our workshops, sometimes people have the hardest time thinking about it because they say, well, I don't have any children. I don't have any grandchildren. I don't know who I would be giving my legacy to. I don't know who would care. And so how would you respond to those people who can't easily see who to bequeath the tangible legacy gifts to?
Yeah, that's I get that question a lot, too. First of all, I want to say that even people with children say, my kids don't care. Why am I doing this? And my answer to them is that they will care almost always, not necessarily always. Now, for those who don't have kids, and first of all, to get them to understand that they have left important legacies and there are people in their lives that they've impacted a lot who would like to have something of them, so extended family or students or mentees or clients, people that they have some kind of relationship with, they shouldn't be shy about leaving them. They will treasure that. The other thing I suggest is to think about what it is that they really treasure and want to leave behind, and then think about an organization or a library, you know, an organization that shares that interest, a library, perhaps an educational institution, or some organization that they've been part of. For example, a woman who had a very special piano from her concert pianist grandmother, and she didn't have anybody to give it to, so she did give it to her church with a plaque and with a story of the grandmother. So I think there are lots of possibilities for people without children to leave cherished legacies that will be cherished.
Thank you for that, Meg. Meg, listener Judith asked a question that I imagine others are also wondering. Could we have that very short legacy will or ethical will that you read a little while ago that was just so poignant and touched many of us deeply? Is there, I wonder, would you be willing to make that available?
Oh, absolutely. And I do want to say that I found that quote in Rachel Fried's book, Women's Lives, Women's Legacies, if anybody has that book. But I'd be happy to share that.
Well, then I will give you my suggestion for how you might best do that. If you'll email that to me, Meg, you know my email address. I write a recap of each of these sessions, so that listeners can tomorrow read that recap, and I can include that short, beautiful legacy letter in the recap.
Oh, that's wonderful. And there's something else that I didn't get to say that I think might also belong in that recap.
Okay, we only have about another moment, and so please share briefly.
Gosh. I'm so sorry. We're done.
Yeah, me too.
So anyway, this is the three universal deathbed questions that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, geriatric psychiatrist, found that people you know that's what they ask themselves on their deathbeds. They are: have I given and received love? Have I lived my life, not someone else's? And have I left the world a little better than I found it? These are big legacy questions. And we mustn't leave them for our deathbeds. We must be asking them all the time. So...
Those questions are beautiful questions to sum up the beautiful wisdom about legacy that you've shared with us, Meg, and to end this session. I want to thank you so very much for sharing your wisdom with us and your stories and just the heart, the passion you have for legacy comes through so beautifully, and I think it's a real gift to all of us. So thank you so very much, Meg.
And thank you so very much, Ron, and everyone listening.
And thank you all for listening. And I invite you to please be sure to join us for the next session in the Transforming Aging Summit, which will be beginning in about 15 or 16 minutes. For now, be well.
Thank you for joining us for the Transforming Aging Summit, brought to you by the Shift Network. For more information about joining our global community dedicated to helping people awaken to their divine humanity and take inspired action, visit www.theshiftnetwork.com. To learn more about the Amazing Aging Package, which is the online collection of top experts on conscious aging, or to add all of these interviews to your personal library, visit www.transformingagingsummit.com/upgrade. Thank you for sharing this summit with your friends and family. We appreciate your dedicated support.